Okay, so now we're going to move on to chapter 5. This is the first four sections in the book. We'll do the last sections on Tuesday, a week from today. Okay, so we have had, did quite a bit of work with discrete time signals already. So first I want to review what we've seen. It helps with midterm 1, 2, or as well. Okay, so midterm, so here's the four things we've seen already for discrete time signals, and we've seen similar things for continuous time signals. So we can represent a discrete time signal as a formula. So here's a cosine. You can use a lot of cosines in this class, and we'll continue to do so. So cosine, frequency is pi over 2 radians per sample. That's useful in analysis. We can also, you've done this a lot with MATLAB programming, we can take a finite number of samples for plotting or additional calculations. So we get a vector. What's the connection between x of n and x vector? Is there a connection? Cosine of 0 is 1, cosine of pi over 2, cosine of pi. Right, so all this is the first 8 samples, starting with n equals 0, of the formula for x of n is cosine of pi over 2 times little n. So it's useful in simulation, plotting, playback as an audio signal. We've also looked at properties. We've looked at both even symmetry about the origin, odd symmetry about the origin. It's not new, but it's useful in a new way. Piecewise representation, we've had rectangular pulses and triangular pulses and so forth. And so here I've kind of, it's really MATLAB syntax here, rect pulse is a MATLAB command. So this is a rectangular pulse and we can define it in piecewise terms. So we can say that, so that this is another way I could have written rectangular pulse, but it's hard to type that one. So we, you know, we can say, well, this, in fact, this is n over 10, what I have up there. Okay, so the rect pulse, the way that we've done it in the past, in continuous time, is what's the amplitude? 1. And then we have done this kind of non-causal version, and this is the way that MATLAB defines it as well. Right? So it's length 1 second in this case, height 1, whatever the units are, voltage, whatever the units happens to be, area is 1. Okay. So now this is interesting. So that's the same. Well, the rect pulse is 1 if the argument is between minus 1/2 and half. And you'll notice I'm not including both points. We discussed that last time. So in the rectangular pulse definition, you know, there are lots of ways I can define it, but we're defining it so that we get a 1 at when t is minus 1/2 and a 0 when t is half. And it's 0 otherwise. Now, this is a good mathematical model for something. Can you tell me what you might use this to model, rectangular pulse, to model something? If 0 is off and 1 is on, what could this be? What could you turn off? What could be off and then on for a short time and off again? It could be simple. You don't have to overthink this one.
A switch.
A switch. Light switch could be off and then on. I could hit the brakes and let them go on a car. This is a good input signal to measure, to model something in a physical system. It's a possible input. You know, in this case, you know, if we simplify this a little bit, this is n over 10. Please let me know when you see a mistake. All right, so this is, whatever the argument is, has to be between minus 1/2, inclusive, and 1/2, not included. or not inclusive. So now if I multiply through by this is interesting. Alright, we'll see what MATLAB does on this one. Alright, so we get a 1. And it'd be very interesting. So I get 1 where I get 5 less than or equal to n less than or equal to 5. Minus 5, I'm sorry. So I go from 5 inclusive to 5 not included. Things are consistent here. And 0 otherwise. So what this, so now how many samples are in this pulse? Now look, we just count this stuff. Discrete time makes it so much easier in some ways. So I can do, I just count this, right? How many samples? 10. Because we don't include 5. So 10 samples in duration, and that kind of gets back to the 10 here. So dividing by 10 gives me a rectangular pulse that is 10 samples wide. That's the effect. All right, that's a piecewise representation, right? We define it over one interval one way and over another interval another way. So we define it in pieces. So we've seen this. And here's what the rectangular pulse looks like. In MATLAB, this is the way I've typed it, so I've just let n go from minus 7 to 7, plotted the rectangular pulse over those ranges, that range of n, and I turn on at 5, stay on at 4, turn off at 5. So I have my rectangular pulse starts at minus 5, goes all the way to 4, as we've expected. So in discrete time, it'd be the same kind of model. So if I were sampling something, and again, I turn the light switch on, and it's on for 10 sampling periods, and then off. I tap the brake, or I hold, press the brakes for 10 sampling periods, and then I let go of the brake, let off the brake. All right. Discrete time systems, we've seen a little bit of this, but let's, now we'll go deeper into it. So a system in general is going to take an input signal and produce an output signal. And this is the simplest kind. I have one input, one output. I can have more complicated configurations. I can have two inputs and one output and one input and two outputs and all kinds of variations. But just start with something, you know, simplest case here. For discrete time, it simply means that my input signal X is in discrete time and my output signal is in discrete time. There's a couple of examples. I can take the input as it is and simply square it. We've seen this already. We talked about squaring this in continuous time. Remember, I create, put a cosine in, frequency F naught in continuous time. What frequencies come out? Remember back then? Audio demos for this. Cosine goes in, F naught, what comes out? Can you give me one frequency that comes out? 2 F naught. Very good. Give me another frequency that comes out. Well, there's also a negative 2 times F naught. That's correct. Can you give me another frequency that comes out? Give you a hint. You can't hear it if you played it up over the speakers. In fact, it wouldn't play over the speakers. I heard it. It's over here somewhere. Zero. All right, so two frequencies come out, 0 and 2 times F naught. And, of course, if we have 2 times F naught, we're going to have minus 2 times F naught. Absolutely. All right, so the squaring block would do the same thing in discrete time. Put a cosine in on the input signal. That's a discrete time cosine like we have up there in the formula. What will come out? Cosine at twice the frequency and a 0 frequency term as well. Averaging. Now, this may be a little bit new. So averaging here is I'm going to take the current input signal. Remember, this input signal is just a stream of samples based on what values of little n we're going to look at and consider. So the output, the current output value, y of n, whatever, you know, current means whatever n is, the current time in discrete time, the current output value is the current input value averaged with the previous input value. All right, so I can write y of n as x of n plus x of n minus 1 divided by 2. I'm taking the average, two sample average, of the current input value x of n and the previous input value x of n minus 1. This is an example of a filter, which we'll talk a lot about the next today and several weeks from now as well, over the next several weeks. Very simple filter, and we'll see it today in some audio demos. Okay, so two examples of taking an input signal x and producing an output signal y. Oh, and the squaring block is in slide 1-16 with the analysis of what happens when a cosine is used as the input. Okay, so this idea of a filter is very powerful. It lets you modify the input signal in all kinds of ways. And the implementation isn't all that difficult either, which is nice, in discrete time. Which will tell you, in continuous time, it's not quite as straightforward. So a filter, you know, in some sense, alters the input. So a filter is going to be now the book uses a couple terms synonymously, so we'll do a little bit more finer definition. Not every system's a filter. So, all right. So the filter, you know, I like coffee. Drink a lot of coffee, maybe too much. So this is a really good example of a filter. So what does it do? What does it filter?
Coffee.
Coffee, thank you. Can you be more precise? Are they beans? We put the beans in
coffee grounds.
Coffee grounds. Okay, so I grind up the coffee. Now I know today we make coffee all kinds of ways. This isn't the only way to do it. So yes, we grind up some beans, put it in there, and then pour water through. Hopefully it's hot. And then what happens?
Water flows through.
What about the coffee grounds?
They don't go through.
Hopefully they don't go through. That's the hope, right? It's a little bit bitter. So this is a filter, alters the input. Simple example. Water flows in, and why? So what's the difference in why the water flows in and the coffee grinds don't?
Because the panel's
size. Size of the molecule. So water is just H2O, very small molecule, very small holes in the coffee filter, passes the water, does not pass the, or at least should not pass the grinds unless they're really, really small. Or some fragments really, really small. So generally, grinds are not going to go through. So you've designed this, it's a mechanical, I suppose, you could think of it that way, mechanical system that passes the smallest molecules but doesn't pass larger molecules. Okay, now for us, we're going to talk about, the first thing we're going to talk about as filters go is a finite impulse response filter. You can call it FIR. If you're more of an acoustics person, you call it FIR. Both are valid. Not a problem, whichever one you prefer. So the finite impulse response filter simply takes kind of what we saw on the last slide. It takes some number of the input samples and does something with them. Okay. So in this case, if we write this out, it's a weighted sum of some finite group of input samples. Now in this case, it's pretty simple. It's just two input samples, the current input sample and this previous input sample. But it's a weighted sum of two input samples. But we can extend this idea. We can do a weighted sum with 4, 5, 10, 100, 500. Okay, so in practice, FIR filters could be taking 512 samples at one time, weighting them and adding them together to get one output value. All right, so Y of N is a scalar value. It's a real number. Generally, it's for our cases, X, the input has been real value, and our output's been real value. We may see an example of that, or another example where we might do something complex value. But for the most part, our input has been real value, the output's been real value. But this formula also holds if the input happens to be a complex value, it doesn't change my formula. It just simply means that Y of N could be complex value. So So it's a pretty general approach, and it's got really good applications in all kinds of settings, speech and audio processing, image and video processing, communication systems, sonar, radar, ultrasound, a ton of applications for this filter. Okay, so let's extend this idea of an averaging filter one term more. Okay, so let's do a three-term or three-point averaging filter. The book calls it a running average. Yes, it is called that. It's also called a moving average. The book mentions this too. I'll simply call it an averaging filter, just for simplicity. And we'll see why the term moving average in just a second. So in this example, each output sample Y of N is an average, or the average, of three input samples. Now the way it's written, it's a little interesting. Well, I know that's the current input sample, X of N. So what's X of N plus one?
The
future relative to N. Right? It's one sample in the future. That's interesting. And X of N plus two?
Two
samples in the future. Right? Well, that's interesting. And then we just divide by three. So I'm taking an average. All right, so let's go ahead and see what this looks like with some example data. So here's my X. And how would you describe the shape of it, or what signal does this look like? We'd seen it in interpolation.
Triangle.
So triangular pulse, finite duration. And we'll start, the way we're going to start, we're just going to start our attention when N is minus 3. And just see what happens. So there's the input signal. Output signal, so let's build it up. So the first value, you're going to compute by taking the first three samples. And remember, the reference, we're going to start with little n equals minus 3. So to do the calculation, I need the current input value, which is at n equals minus 3, the future value relative to n equals minus 3, which is at minus 2, and the value one sample beyond that at minus 1. So here's our window of samples that we're going to use, and we simply average them. So we add them up and divide by 3. And that's going to produce what? What does that produce?
Zero.
So that's our first sample. Okay, so let's take the window and slide it to the next group of samples. So now my reference is little n equals minus 2. So I need that sample value. I also need two samples in the future. So I need, that's also 0 when n is minus 1. And when n is 0, I have 2. So now what is the output going to be? So that's your question.
Two-thirds.
If I add up the samples in the window, divide by 3. So I did my best to hand sketch two-thirds. Okay, next one. All right, now I've got three samples, values 0, 2, and 4. Average value, 2. 0, 2, and 4 added up, give me 6, divided by 3 is 2. And okay, next one up, 2, 4, 6, average value, 4. We just keep going. So we keep computing them as we slide the window. We're finished. Okay, now you notice there's been two different ways to do this. One was, well, I take the current input value and some number of the previous input values. That's what I had shown first. And the last slide had, well, no, we're going to take the current input and two future input values. Now, the book makes a statement so it's good to kind of always evaluate, you know, claims in books. And there's always other editions of books that may fix that claim. So if you look at the version on the last slide, we call this a non-causal filter. It relies on future input values relative to our current point in time. Okay. Now, you can make a couple comments about that. The book says, well, we can't do that in real time. Well, but then the book doesn't say what it means by real time. Real time's got lots of definitions. Okay, so we can think about real time. I like Professor Pat's definition, which is guaranteed delivery of data by a certain point in time. So guaranteed delivery of data by a certain point in time. I like that one. What the book was trying to get at is, well, we can't, if we're going to process only with the current time, I don't have access to the future, and that's correct. But what I can do in implementation is to buffer the input signal and then compute. We do this in practice. We do this in speech compression. We do it in lots of context. And that, so you can still do it in real time. You just have to insert a buffer, which means I have to delay for two samples so I can collect n plus x of n plus 1 and x of n plus 2. Now I can compute the output y of n. We can do that. We can do that in practice. But it causes a delay. It means that now I've delayed the calculation by two samples before I can give you an output. So it's possible that I might miss a real time, I might miss the guarantee of delivery. So yeah, it's possible that I don't meet a real time constraint. That is true. So just trying to kind of scrutinize the book's claim. Causal filter, a little more common than the non-causal one. Oh, in time domain processing, as we're doing here. The causal filter only uses the present and past input values. Remember, this is a finite impulse response filter. We only need to work with some collection of input values. We don't need to use previous output values in our calculations. So we're only concerned about input values. So the causal filter uses only present and past input values. We can compute the nth output sample as soon as the nth input sample arrives. We don't have to wait around for any additional samples to arrive if we use a causal version. So here's the three-point averaging filter with the causal representation or processing. So I take the current input value x of n, add it to the previous input value, which I've seen and I can keep around in memory. And then the input sample two samples, the input signal two samples ago, which again I keep in memory. I've seen it before and I retain it in memory. So now I just have to, again, I still do the same thing. I average three values that are consecutive in time, but now I'm using a causal approach instead of a non-causal one. Go ahead. Great question. And so coming up next, you have anticipated my slide incredibly well. Right, so we're going to take the same signal we had before, and now I'm going to do the causal approach for the processing. So I don't have to rely on the, so now I'm just going to do the sliding window using current and present and past values. That is to say, current and past values. So now my reference, my starting point is now shifted by 2. It's little n equals minus 1. Okay, and so my first value is going to be at n equals minus 1. That's my starting point. In order to compute the output value of minus 1, I need to know the input at minus, at index minus 1, and the input at index minus 2 and the input at index minus 3. And I just average the 3. So we keep going. Take the next. Now little n is 0. Still get my 2/3. The little n be 1. Get my 2. Same calculations as before. And so forth. Okay. What's the relationship now? Based on the question, what's the relationship now between this causal version and the previous slide, which had a non-causal version? What's the difference? Shifted to the right by two samples. Okay, so I get a time shift. Otherwise, it's the same answer. Okay, now let's talk about the general case. We've seen a two-point averaging filter and a three-point averaging filter. Okay, so now let's talk about capital N plus 1 point filter. So to define the filter, to define the FIR filter, causal FIR filter, I need to know what are my coefficients. So right now my coefficients for the two-point averaging filter is one half and one half. So I can write this as some constant V0 times x of n plus another constant V1 times x of n minus 1. So I have two constants in this case. This is capital M equals 1, first order. More generally, if I'm going to say, well, if I have, you know, an nth order filter, I have capital M plus 1 coefficients. And to do the calculation of the current output value, I also need to know the current and previous input samples. How many of those do I need? Same number. I need capital M plus 1. So for every coefficient that I have, I need to know some value of the current or previous input signal. To go ahead and multiply these two terms together, and I just keep going. I can just add that to the next term in my calculation. So I end up with two vectors. I have a vector of coefficients, B0 through B sub capital M, and I have another vector, the current input value, x of n, and the previous m input values, two vectors. And all I have to do is do the vector dot product between the two, and I get the current output value. And MATLAB does this stuff really well, right? It's built to do vector calculations and matrix vector multiplications and all kinds of matrix calculations. So for MATLAB, this is a very, for MATLAB, it's just a vector dot product. Okay, so the formula for this, the general case, is that I take a sum of, again, I need my coefficients and I need the current and previous input values. So if I look at this two-point case, there are lots of synonymous, so I said in there. All right, so two-point case. All this is, well, if I take, again, I take the general case, my index is K0 to capital M. Now, for this two-tap averaging, capital M is what? How many terms do I have? Two. So I start at 0, I end at 1. Two terms. So for this case, I have capital M equals 1, so it's a first order. I have two coefficients. I have B0 equals 1/2. B1 equals 1/2. So now if I go ahead and go through the mechanics of this, I start little k equals 0, so I get B0 plus x of n. Summation, so I add plus. And now little k is 1, the next value. And I get B sub 1. Times x of n minus 1. This is exactly what I had before. But this is the general form. So the larger the order, the more terms I'm going to have. I'm going to have how many, so if I have an order of m, how many terms do I have here in the summation? Or capital M or capital M plus 1?
Capital M plus 1.
Capital M plus 1. So capital M plus 1 is the number of coefficients or points that I'm going to use. Capital M is my order. All right, so if you look at this summation, all it is a vector dot product. So I'm taking the vector of B terms and doing a vector dot product with the vector of the current and previous input value. So in MATLAB, let's not on the slides, but so if I have coefficients 1/2, 1/2, and I have a vector of the current and previous inputs, let's say 1 and 2, or 2 and 4 is fine. So that would be, my x here would be my current input of 2, previous input of 4. And then the two together, right. Okay, so to do a vector dot product, we have to have a row vector times a column vector. And so the single quote here in MATLAB is the transpose. But that's my answer. That's the vector dot product of the two. So coefficients are 1/2 and 1/2. All right, so coefficients here are my averaging filter, 1/2 and 1/2. My B vector, my X vector, current input value 2, previous input value 4. The current output value is simply the vector dot product of the two. So we can actually use the multiply command without the point this time. We really want a vector multiplication instead of a pointwise multiplication. Oh, there's no tune-up today. That wasn't clear from the schedule. There's no tune-up today. All right, so here's the averaging filter with three terms. So the filter order is capital M equals 2. I have M plus 1 coefficients, so I have three coefficients. My coefficient values are 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. Now we can talk about the more general case. If I want have an averaging filter, then the coefficients that I want are all going to be the same value, right? So if it's a 2-point case, it's 1/2 and 1/2. 3-point case, it's 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. The general case, it's just 1 divided by capital M plus 1. All the coefficients have the same value for an averaging filter. So these coefficients, because I have a, because once I tell you it's a causal FIR filter, all I need to know now is, well, what are the coefficient values, and I can figure out the rest. So if the coefficient values, so here I use it slightly different. So I have 1 and minus 1. We can go ahead and apply the summation here in the upper right-hand corner of the slide. Well, the first, so what is it? Well, y of n is causal now. So y of n is going to be whatever B naught is times X of N, well, that's 1, plus whatever B1 is times X of N minus 1, well, that value is minus 1. So I now get another filter, also very useful filter, it turns out. This is a very simple one. It just takes the difference between the current input value and the previous input value. Pretty simple to compute. Very effective filter. We'll see this in action later in the class. Later in the semester. Here's another example. Okay, now I have a 3-point filter. Capital M is 2. Do the same, apply the same formula here, just a weighted sum. Okay, so B0 is 1, so I have 1 times X of N. Oh, but I have a 0, it's okay. So I have a 0 here for B sub 1. Okay, so the X of N minus 1 term is zeroed out. It's not there. And the last coefficient is minus 1, and that's B sub 2, so that's going to give me whatever minus 1 times X of N minus 2. This also has some usefulness as well as a filter. Okay. This one we will see in action later as well, in a demo, later in the semester. Okay. But very easy to calculate. I just take I subtract two values. So I just have to keep around in memory. I have to remember what the previous input was, and then I can easily compute the current output value whenever a new input value arrives.
Hey, what happened there? Very interesting. It's very interesting. Okay, well, the animation, anyway. So this is right out of the book. So we're going to look at an example from the book of applying both the 3-point averaging filter and a 7-point averaging filter to the data and see what happens. And then I'll have an audio example for the same two filters coming up. So we have x of n has two parts to it. I have a slowly increasing exponential, right? So when n is 0, it's 1, and then it's 1.02, and then it's 1.02 times 1.02, etc. And then I have an oscillating component . The MATLAB code's on the next slide for all this. All right, so this is from the book. No idea what. Okay, whatever it was. Okay, who knows? Okay, so what I'm going to do is take this data. I'm going to plot it. Middle plot, and then I'm going to apply both a 3-point averaging filter and a 7-point averaging filter to the data. So here's the data as it, this is the input signal x of n defined over the range of n from 0 to 40 inclusive. So I've generated from the formula x of n, these are just the points directly from the formula. I have put in on top of this the left term in red. This is the gradually rising exponential sequence, just for reference, to see what happens. And then I've identified or set to the values of 0, x of n outside of this range from 0 to 40 inclusive. Okay, so first up, we'll apply the 3-tap averaging filter, and you go, well, not a lot has changed. Fair enough. Okay, so we can look at the red line, but I will point out some differences in just a second. See the red line? Okay, so those points that were on the red line are slightly below it, but otherwise it looks like about the same trend. The maximum amplitude, not so different. But what differences do you see? How about just from 0 to 40? Let's just focus on from 0 to 40 for now. Do I see much change at all? Go ahead.
I mean, they start at different places in terms of graphically. And at 0 there, you're starting in your head that operates well.
So there's some differences here. As the filter is starting to respond to the input data. That's right. Where else are you seeing the difference? At the end as well. So there's a little bit of a difference at the end. Because the input signal has how many samples in it that are not zero? What's the extent here? Of x of n, what's the non-zero extent of the signal? It goes from 0 to 40. How many samples? 41. Always, remember, there's always that, or the origin is something you want to include. 41 samples. But if you look at the extent of the output of the averaging filter, it's longer by 2 samples. Okay, this has to do with the sliding window that goes across x of n. Remember, it's going to compute values over 3 consecutive input samples. So there's a little bit of a trailing effect that happens. So it's wider, longer, by two samples. Yes, to the seventh point. Okay, ooh, things have changed. Something happened. Okay, but let's continue to the last observation. How many samples wide is the output from the 7-point averaging filter?
47.
47, right? So we started with 41 samples, and now we have 47 for the 7-tap averaging filter. For the 3-tap averaging filter, we have 43. Sorry, it ends at index 42, sorry, but we have to remember. Origin's in there, 43 samples. So it's two samples longer for the 3-point case, six samples longer for the 7-point case. Do you see the pattern? So how much longer is it? M. So it's the order. You can also think of it as length minus one. Either way. All right, so let's look at some other differences. Now, the big difference is, well, right here. Right, suddenly, you know, this cosine that was really with large amplitude, right, the amplitude's a half on the input signal, and it, you know, it's pretty close to that here on the 3-point case. But for the 7-point case, that amplitude's been reduced a lot. Okay, now we've already talked about frequency content. So what's the frequency of the cosine here? In radians per sample, what is it? In case you're wondering where the n went, it's there. Okay. What's the frequency here?
One eighth.
You're close. Think about, so what units do I want? Radians per sample. That will help. There are two possible units even. All right, so this is cosine of omega naught n. Right, omega naught's the frequency in radians per sample. Remember, the argument has to be radian, a radian measure, because I have a cosine. It's an argument feeding to a cosine. So the argument has to be in radians. And n is unit less. We call it a sample index just to keep track of it. So this is in radians per sample. Now what's the discrete time frequency? I think I heard it. Pi over 4 or 2 pi over 8. So you can simplify this if you wanted to. All right, so there's your frequency in radians per sample.
Yeah.
Now we also talked about we also talked about at one point how to convert from continuous time frequency to discrete time frequency. All right, so back in that conversation, remember this, and so we take the continuous time frequency f naught and normalize by the sampling rate. All right, so from this, we know that this is pi over 4, where 2 pi over 8 is another, we can just keep it that way if we want. 2 pi times 1 over 8, so it tells us that the continuous time frequency is 1/8 of the sampling rate. Okay, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. If you would like.
I would like.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yes, thank you. All right, omega naughts, we tend to be radians per second for omega naught. That's correct. Okay, so this tells us that we kind of have, it's kind of lower frequency. It's 1/8 of the sampling rate. Okay, so what that's saying is that for the filter, the 7-point filter, this, whatever the frequency is, which is, again, in radians per sample, pi over 4 or 2 pi over 8, it's getting reduced in strength as it goes through the 7-point averaging filter. But for the 3-point averaging filter, that frequency value, that frequency kind of goes through mostly unchanged. It pretty much goes through completely from input to output. And we'll find out why that is very soon. So that's one kind of big difference. We also pointed out, that you know these original values here left of zero are all zeroed out, and that remains the same for all three cases because we're doing a causal averaging filter. So any value here, the value of the filter output only depends on the previous and past output values that it's seen. So that means that if I have all zeros here and I have my sliding window here, I just use this sample plus previous samples. Some would be zeroed out. So left of zero for either case, 3-point or 7-point, the output is all zero because the output's all zero here on the input signal left of the origin. So my sliding window is just going to pick up all zeros here until I finally hit the origin. So I finally hit the origin of the input signal, which is at n equals zero. So my output at n equals zero is not zero, because it's going to be whatever the input is divided by 7 to the left, or the input divided by 3. So the input at zero divided by 7 on the right, or the input divided by 3 on the left for the 3-tap case. Another point of difference that you pointed out was right here at the start. Remember, we have a sliding window here. So as the window slides from left to right across the input signal in the middle here, initially I pick up the origin and the two zeros on the left, the 3-point case. So I don't get the full value of the input at zero. I get 1/3 of the value. Now my window slides 1 point to the right. Now I pick up the first two values here of the input signal, and I divide that by 3. I'm still not up to where I was. I'm not up to full scale yet. I haven't fully responded to the filter or to the input. Or have I? So let's take a look at that. Maybe I have. So compare there and there, pretty close to responding. So there's one sample delay in responding to the input signal. That's interesting. We'll find out there's a reason for that. We'll get to that a little bit later in the class. Over here, it takes a bit longer to fully respond to the input. I have a longer window. So now I'm doing... So I now have my sliding window at 7 samples long. It takes quite a while before I fully respond. We'll find out later the answer is 4. It takes 4 samples to fully respond. Later, we'll figure this out later in closed form. You also pointed out that at the end, things have changed. The output's longer in both cases for the 3-point and 7-point, and longer by the order of the filter. So there's a falling off effect here at the end as the window slides the rest of the way across the input signal. Okay, this is in the MATLAB code for all this. What I want to point out in the MATLAB code, so let's kind of go through this briefly. So on the upper left is the range of n that we want to start with, which is the 0 to 40 to define the x. I then put in some zeros on either side, which you saw. And I go ahead and determine my coefficient. So the 1s is just a vector of all 1s of length 3. And I scale it by 1/3. So my coefficients are 1/3, 1/3, 1. Sorry, 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. The next one is my coefficients are 7 of them, and each 1/7. What's new here, what's very new in the code, is there is a MATLAB command called filter. And it will do this weighted sum for you. What you feed to it is the first argument is the coefficients that you want to use. There is a middle term, which is 1. We'll get to that later. Don't need this for FIR filters, but we'll need it for another kind of filter later. And then the input signal x. And it does the job for you.
does it work for you? So that's Y3, that's the output for the 3-point filter. Y7 is the output for the 7-point filter. And then just a bunch of plotting commands. Okay, so it's kind of nice. Filter's built in to MATLAB. All right, let's do some audio demos. Okay, so I had to kind of create one, so we'll see how it sounds to you. So the idea here is to take three frequencies that are very different in value. You can see the values here. So 329 hertz, 1318, and 2637. So these are all notes on the Western scale. They're the note E in different octaves. So octave 4, 6, and 7. So the frequencies in hertz. Sorry for not putting the hat. I'll fix that. Get the hat on there. All right. So the three frequencies in hertz, I can convert that to radians per second using the conversion here of 2 pi f naught divided by fs. I use a sampling rate of 8,000 hertz. And remember, octave scaling, right? So it means that my E in octave 4, so my E in octave 5 is twice the E in octave 4. Right? So every time I go up an octave, the frequency doubles. And you'll notice that if you just do a hand calculation or mental calculation. So F of E4 is 1/4 of the frequency of note E6, and then note E6 is 1/2 of the frequency of note E7, right? This is E on the 7th octave. Okay, so a couple demos here. So number one is the original signal, 3 cosines. This sounded a little bit, it might not be as pleasant as it could be, but so here is the 3-point averaging filter and then the 7-point averaging filter effect. So let's, and the MATLAB code's on the next slide. Now, before you run code, it's kind of nice to go ahead and clear out. You'll notice the variables here on my workspace on the upper right, on the right-hand side of the screen. It's kind of nice just to clear everything out. So you close, clear all, clears all the variables, close all, closes all the figures in one shot. You can do a CLC, which gives you a new kind of blank command line screen here, or subscreen to work with. So let's see what we got here. So these, I'll play it a couple more times. So the first signal was that the sum of the 3 cosines. The next signal is the output of the 3-point averaging filter. And the next one is the output of the 7-point averaging filter. And so see if you can remember three frequencies, kind of a low, a medium, and a high frequency. Add it together. So they're playing, the three notes are being played at the same time. All right, let's try it again. So again, originally three frequencies. The output of the three point, see? So it turns out tap is also synonymous with point. Probably figured that out in other context. Okay, so the three point averaging filter, what happens in that middle sound?
You lose amplitude.
Volume decreases, and then what about frequency content? Did I lose anything? I can do the musicians here. Okay, so try it again. So again, the first one is all three notes, and then the filter. Looking at the musicians here.
Losing like high end.
Did I lose any? Didn't lost anything. It's very interesting. So, Someone's trying it out. That's good. Okay, so that's the spectrum. So there's a command in MATLAB called FFT, which will plot the Fourier series for you in the frequency domain. Might be nice on a test, I suppose. Be kind of handy. All right, so the FFT command, don't have a slide on that, but so this will give you the discrete time Fourier series. It's a Fourier series expansion. So here are the three tones. So you'll see that I got a lot of strength on the plot that a little better way. Okay, that makes a little more sense. Okay, so this is the actual frequency content. So I have a lot of volume on the highest frequency, not as much volume in the middle, and not as much on the low. So I got three positive frequency components, three negative frequency components. The result of applying the first filter is that I have de-emphasis. You notice that if I compare now the, let's choose the positive frequencies. So if I look at the positive frequencies here, the highest frequency is really low in volume, but it's still there. I couldn't get rid of all of it, but I got rid of a lot of it. Okay. But you'll notice that the other two frequencies that were got through, and it's about the amplitude's a little bit misleading. So the amplitude is different on the two plots, so 1600 versus 1800. But anyway, these two got through. The low and medium frequency, the high frequency did not get through very well. Incredibly attenuated. So you can still hear it, but not as strongly as it was in the beginning. Okay, next one. Oh, I did a sixth-point averaging filter on this one. Okay, not a seven. So on this one, the low-frequency component gets through. Again, positive frequencies are here. And the two higher frequencies are attenuated greatly. Okay, so that's interesting. So if I have a three-tap averaging filter, I certainly, which is this plot, I reduce the highest frequency, but the two middle ones, the middle and the low, get through. On the 7-point filter, the middle and the high frequency are greatly attenuated in the middle one, so the low frequency gets through. Okay, so the longer the filter length, longer the number of coefficients, the more I lose high frequency content. Or you can also say, well, low frequencies don't pass as well. I use a 6-point averaging filter, not a 7 on this one. Okay, in the MATLAB code, again, not a lot of the same things we've been doing all along. Sampling rate, play each sound for 3 seconds, the frequencies of the three notes in hertz, conversion to radians per sample, the relative amplitude values of the three frequency tones, so 8 on the lowest frequency, 4 in the middle, and 1 on the highest frequency. Other way around, I'm sorry, 8 on the highest frequency, 4 in the middle, and 1 on the lowest frequency. And then I just simply built up each component in a for loop. I normalized the signal so that the sound command wouldn't clip, and you could hear the relative amplitude values.
and then applied the three filters, the two filters, the three-point averaging filter, the six-point averaging filter, and then play out the sounds. But again, the filter command's doing the work for this demo. So that's averaging filters and introduction to finite impulse response filters. So now we're going to start characterizing them in the time domain a little bit more. And to do this, we're going to introduce a new signal, which is the unit impulse. This also has a mathematical, it can model something that happens in physical reality. So it's simply a signal that's one at the origin and zero elsewhere. We're in discrete time. So can you think of what that might mathematically model? Something's off, and then it's suddenly on at the origin and off again. In other words, over one, think about this back in continuous time, over one sampling period at the origin, it's on. You can think of it as a rectangular pulse that's equal to one sampling duration. So what could that mathematically model? You don't have to be overly complicated. Go ahead.
Spark.
Happens quickly. Goes away quickly. Light switch on and off quickly. Relative to our sampling period, right? This is something that happens, and it's an impulsive event relative to a sample time. And a sample time is, if we work it back to seconds, it's going to be some sampling time. So it happens very quickly for a sampling time. Mathematically, we could do it in piecewise form, one at the origin, zero elsewhere. If we shift it, so this is our Kronecker delta, or discrete time impulse, shifted by two samples to the right, so it's just the delta of n minus 2. So whenever the origin is zero, that's where the impulse occurs. So n minus 2 is zero, which means n equals 2, the impulsive event occurs. So we can take this idea and take any discrete time signal and break it down into a weighted combination of these unit impulses. So here's our unit impulse of n plus 2. So this is taking the impulse and shifting it left by two samples. So in other words, this impulse occurs when n plus 2 equals 0, which is when n equals minus 2. That's the location of our impulse. Next sample, where's that one? Delta of? N plus 1. And then we scale it by 2. Next one, well, it's at the origin, we just scale it by 3 in amplitude. Next one, right, shift it to the right by 1. And then we scale it by 2. And then finally, we shift it to the right by 2 samples. Okay, there's a MATLAB code for this. We can represent it as just a vector of sample values. Right? 0, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 0 over the range of n from minus 3 to 3 inclusive. Or I can use the triangular pulse, and the same thing happens when I divide by 5, just like in the rectangular pulse case earlier, the width of my triangular pulse now is 5 samples wide. So the triangular pulse is twice as wide as the rectangular pulse. The triangular pulse is 1 sample wide by default. So either one works, and the plot's on the right. There's no MATLAB function for delta of n. I looked and looked and looked, couldn't find one. So either you just put it in the way you're sampling the signal. You can use rect pulse of n. That actually works. But if someone looked at your code, it may not be obvious you meant an impulse there. So it's there, but it's a little awkward for readability. Now, with this more, this example on the left is just a special case of this formula, which is I can take any signal x of n and break it down one sample at a time and represent each sample as a shifted delta, unit impulse, sorry, scaled by whatever value x has at that point. So I can, it looks more complicated, but it's useful. This turns out to be a weighted sum of delayed unit impulses, and I can represent any signal x of n, even one that's infinitely long, using this decomposition. Okay, so this unit impulse turns out to be incredibly useful in characterizing a finite impulse response filter in the time domain. If we put in the impulse, the response of this is called the impulse response. It's not meant to be tricky here. So impulse response is just the response to the impulse. And when the system is a finite impulse response filter, we know how to build up that input-output relationship. For an FIR filter, we simply take whatever the input is, which is here is a unit impulse, and we just build up the terms here. We take the coefficient B of K times the appropriate input value delayed by K samples. So if you look at this, this delta of the unit impulse, delta of N minus K, is 1 only when N equals K, and it's 0 everywhere else. So what I do is I end up with a sum here of, so H of N is basically just the filter coefficients when I'm within range of my impulse response that isn't zero, and it's zero elsewhere. So this response to an impulse is exactly the filter coefficient. So for the three-tap averaging filter, it's just the coefficient values, one-third, one-third. And for the seven-tap averaging filter, it's just the coefficients, one-seventh, 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 etc. Okay, we'll leave it there, and we'll pick it up next Tuesday for this lecture, and see you on Thursday.